ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 24, Text number 4 onwards. There are not very many purports in this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we'll read a few verses. I think we'll just read the English, if that's okay, because there's many verses and long Sanskrit prose. Carrying on yesterday, where there was a beginning of a description of the locations of the various planets in the universe and the planetary systems. We heard how Rahu was much greater in its extent than even the sun and the moon. And how Rahu, how it was located in relationship with the sun, was 10,000 yojanas below the sun. And below Rahu, also by 10,000 yojanas, which is 80,000 miles, are the planets known as Siddhalok, Charanalok, and Vidyadharalok. Purport by Srila Prabhupada, a very short purport. It is said that the residents of Siddhaloka, being naturally endowed with the powers of yogis, can go from one planet to another by their natural powers without using aeroplanes or similar machines. I'm sure that many of us, maybe not now, of course, but this desire would be there. How nice it would be. No need to go on an aeroplane or a train, queuing up for a ticket, working hard to pay for it. Simply by one's own mystic power, one can travel from here to New York. How nice that would be. Just by desire. We may think like that. Or to go from here to the moon, or some other planet in the universe. How nice it would be. And there are residents of this universe in Siddhalok who can do just that. By their mystic power, they can transfer themselves to other planets within the universe. They don't have to go on Air India or the Rajdhani or whatever it may be. They can merely go by their desire. And sometimes we may also feel like this is a material desire, this city kama, this desire or this lusty desire to try to enjoy the world in a little bit more, how to say, a nicer way. But we are still in the material world. Even if we're in heaven or in the subterranean, this chapter's subterranean heavenly planets. So wherever we are in this universe, the fact is that we are still in the material universe. And no matter how much temporary enjoyment we are receiving, it is nonetheless dukkhalayam shashvatam. It is temporary. And ultimately it is full of misery because this is not a natural situation. It will come to an end. And there is always maya, fear lurking behind the scenes. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarvartin arjuna. Everywhere in this universe is a place of suffering. Even on Brahmalok, it is temporary. Of course, the residents there, these Lord Brahma and those close associates, they are very advanced and spiritually, so they may be above the influence of the modes. But in principle, everywhere in this material world is wrought with fear. Even Indralok, when Bali Maharaj was conquering the universe, even Indra was afraid. He had to run for his life. There is fear. Even Lord Shiva demonstrated that there is fear in this world. Even he had to run from Vrikasura. There's no escape. This material world is like that. It's what it's made of. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said this material world means turmoil and annoyance. So we may try to take some method of avoiding it, or say absorbing ourselves. In this world, people absorb themselves in sense gratification, maybe intoxication, or watching the television, or in playing cricket, or something like this, to try to make themselves think that they're enjoying themselves. But there's no real enjoyment. It's just a method of trying to avoid the inevitable. And sometimes we hear so many different examples, we could say, of persons who, or different examples to illustrate, trying to avoid the inevitable, which is due to come. Prabhupada sometimes uses the example of an ostrich, which, at least according to the example, in fact, whether it happens, but according to the example, when danger comes, what does the ostrich do? What does it do? Yes, it sticks, at least according to the example, it sticks its head into the sand. There is no more danger, because I cannot see it. But this is like the material world, explained by Narada Muni to King Prachinibharishat in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He gives a very nice example after enlightening King Prachinibharishat using the analogy of Paranjan, the enjoyer within the body. Everyone in this world is Paranjan. We may also be little Paranjans, or trying to be. So he enlightened him, and at the end, he had to give it different ways of explaining it to get through to the king, because he was so intoxicated with the idea of going to heaven, another form of illusion, thinking, this will make me happy. This is the goal of life. Power, cities, heavenly elevation, enjoy, fame, name, wealth, strength. Yes, I'll be happy. But how long for? Everyone else is trying to pull the chain and bring you down the drain. It doesn't last long. A few minutes and you're finished. It's all over. So just because we can, he gave the example that the living entity of this world is like a deer in the forest. A deer, mriga, in the forest. The mriga, what is the deer doing in the forest? Everyone in this world is trying to enjoy by nature. We're just looking in the wrong place for that pleasure. In this world, we're looking for the pleasure in external, the sense objects, seeing ourselves in the center and everything around us, how I can enjoy this or how I can avoid suffering from that. It's like we have the fans on now. Oh, how nice it is. How fortunate we are. We have fans. We have aircon. Very nice. This is very wonderful. But it is only to try to reduce the suffering due to the heat or the stuffy air or whatever it is. The fact of the matter is we're living in a stuffy environment or an incompatible environment for the soul. But the living entity gets captivated by those little bits of pleasure that come his way, isn't it? The deer in the forest, Narada explains, that nice, always looking for that nice grass. You see the cows also. You've seen Titikshakuna Kaprabhu. You see in the west, right? They have the cows in the field. Not so much here. But in the west, they have a lot of grass in the fields. The fields are all green, right? At least in England they are. Maybe in America, in most places also, they're green. They're really brilliant green. You hardly see it in India. It's very rare. Now, it's a little bit of greeny stubble here and there. But in the West, the whole field is completely green with thick grass. The cows have a wonderful pasture. So much. And still they stick their noses over the fence to the next field. Even their electric fence,
and you have electric fence. As soon as they touch it, still they're trying to get their noses through to get the grass on the other side of the fence. Even though they've got mountains of grass around them, still this tendency is there. I want more. Well, you see the ducks. We have ducks on some of our farms. And the ducks, it's funny to watch. You throw some chapati or something, they'll grab, they'll all run for the chapati like anything. And then you throw another chapati in another direction, and then they all drop that one and run over there. And they don't get one or the other. They're constantly running from here to there, and they never get anywhere. It's complete anxiety. This is the material world. It's like this. You cannot be satisfied. Always something is better on the other side. Something we always never satisfy where we are in this world. This is another anxiety of this world. I know when I was a kid, we used to collect music records like anything. You know, we used to call it LPs. Now, I don't think they have them nowadays. I don't know. They didn't have CDs and whatever else you have these days. And we used to, next one, I'll be satisfied. Just if I get this one record, I don't need any more. After 2 days, you want another one and another one. Never satisfied in this world. And even the deer is always looking for that sweet green grass. Maybe in the mountains you may get here, but in the West there's so much green grass. He's looking for that green grass in the forest. But he does not see because he's so intoxicated, blinded by the desire for sense gratification. Totally. This is why people cannot absorb Krishna consciousness. Because they are so much absorbed. Bhogaishraya pasaktanam taya purita chetasam vyavasayatmika bodhire keo kuranandam samadho navidyate. They are so much absorbed in sense gratification and the desire for wealth that they cannot engage in devotional service. We may suffer also. Our determination is diminished because of our attachment to sense objects, to meditating on the so-called pleasures of this world. And therefore we cannot actually associate with the mercy of Krishna. Because we're searching elsewhere, going in the wrong direction. So the deer, and we don't realize how dangerous this is. This material world is a dangerous place. It's not just we may fall into a well or there may be a train crash or we get sick. But the real danger is we're engaging in activities which cause us to forget our relationship with Krishna. This is the real danger. And everyone in this world is more or less being educated in a way that they will forget their relationship with Krishna. This is the problem of this material. It is a dangerous place. Samasati ye padapalava plavam mahatpatam punya yasho marari. It's danger at every step. Except for those who take shelter of Krishna. The purpose of our lives is to take shelter of Krishna, not to take shelter of the material energies. Becoming absorbed. For a few moments we may be glorified by a few people. We may have a label on. We may look beautiful in the eyes of a few human beings. In the eyes of the dog, we look like a nice tasty dish. In the eyes of a bird, a nice statue to spew on, to pass stool on, whatever it is. In the eyes of a worm, something to crawl over, maybe to lick up something or to enter into, to make a nest inside. So many worms. We may be called Mr. Universe or Miss World or something, but to another living entity, they see us completely differently. It is very relative in this world. That's why Krishna is absolute. Spirit is absolute. Matter is relative. So the living entities in this material world, we're in this illusion. We're only perceiving this teeny little fraction of reality. Just like the six blind men of Hindustan, who tried to understand the elephant. And each one grabbed a different part. They were blind. One grabs the leg. Oh, this is very like a tree. Another, the trunk. Oh, it is It is just like a long snake or something. Another grabbed the tail like a rope. Another the tusk. Oh, verily it is a spear. Another the ear. Oh, it is like a big flag. Another one the tummy. Oh, it is a big barrel. They're all partly in the truth, but all in the wrong. This is the nature of this material world. Yes, it is right we should enjoy. Everybody wants to enjoy, isn't it? The nature of the living entity is we want to be happy. We just don't know how to get it. We're looking in the wrong place. And this deer is searching for happiness. The green grass, totally absorbed in it, not seeing that right in front of him, there is a tiger creeping up. The tiger is creeping up. You have tigers here in India, so you know all about it. The tiger is creeping up, the tiger of time, ticking away, kind of coming up closer and closer, taking away every moment, imperceptibly. And of course, accompanied by the soldiers of Yavanaraj in the form of various diseases and so on, gradually wearing away the living entity's capacity to enjoy this material world. But the desire continues to burn. So the tiger is creeping up, and he doesn't see because he's still absorbed to the moment of death. Just like, who was that king? Was it whatever the king? Which king was that? He asked his minister, when will this desire to enjoy this world, when will it ever stop? He said, his minister said, no, my lord, even up to the time of death, this will continue. So the king, that's not ridiculous. Like, surely when you get old, you will no longer have this tendency. No, my lord, it is not like that. So then the king, the minister said, I will show you. Wait. So one day the minister came to the king and said, please come now and bring your young daughter with you. He had a young princess, beautiful daughter, and the king brought the daughter, and they went to this house where this man was on his deathbed. As soon as they entered into the room, all around the man were the man's relatives. The priest was there. The doctor was there. People were trying to console him in various ways, showing their love to him. But as soon as the man saw that beautiful young girl enter into his room, his eyes went. He was completely captivated. He forgot everything else. He forgot the tiger creeping up, and he forgot the hunter behind him with his bow and arrow, just waiting for the appropriate moment to shoot the final arrow. The final arrow. Time. We all serve time in this material world, just like we say when you go to prison. Have any of you been in prison? Anyone here been in the prison? Everyone here has been in the prison. We're in it right now. This material world is a prison. And in the prison, they say, I've been in prison many times. You know, did you ever get arrested in your days? I don't know if you did, but we used to get arrested on Harinam every single day and thrown in the prison, locked up sometimes overnight in the prison, sometimes over the weekend, because they didn't let you out until Monday. They would go on holiday or something. So this was a day that we used to get arrested, many other reasons too, as trying to be devotees. Anyway, the whole world is a prison. When you're in the so-called prison within the prison, they say you're serving time. But we're all serving time in this world. You have your sentence, Mr. So-and-so, to 90 years in this human prison. Now you're sentenced to 10 years in a dog prison, 5 years in a cat prison, 1 day in an ant prison. All different types of prison cells that we go into to suffer in different ways. High security prison house. And we're all serving time. But what does time do? We're serving time. Time kills us. This is the result of serving time. There's no time in the material, in the spiritual world. When you serve Krishna, you get free of the effects of time. The results of serving time is that one becomes a buyer. Just like Paranjan, when death was creeping up, when old age was creeping up, he became very fearful. He became Maya, fearful, and very unhappy. Not at all happy. Srila Prabhupada describes the one who actually takes to devotional service instead of serving time in this world, but we serve Krishna, the controller of time, then one becomes Abhaya. One becomes fearless and happy. Wouldn't that be nice? In old age, they become happier and fearless. Very nice. This is the result of practicing Krishna consciousness. The older we become, even though death is creeping up, old age is coming on, diseases are coming in the heart of hearts, one is becoming happier and fearless of all that is going on around. You don't have to fight against it. We simply take shelter of Krishna and thank him for the mercy that he's causing us to surrender to him and not be attached to the so-called shelter of this world, which really affords no shelter at all. It's an illusion. It's like the fellow who is being chased by the wild boar. The boar. You have wild boars, I'm sure, here in India, plentiful. And the boars are sometimes quite aggressive. So this boar was chasing after this man. Sometimes it said a Muslim, but whoever it is. And he was very, very disturbed. Haram! Haram! Of course, that's another story. How the man who was chanting Haram, eventually he was pierced by the boar. Up do you know where. And he left his body. But he was chanting, Haram, Haram, Haram. Very lucky man. A good way to go. We don't propagate it, but anyway, it was a good fortune. Anyway, this other fellow, he was being chased by a wild boar also. And the thing was catching up on him. But then he thought, ah, my good luck. There's a tree. And he could just reach the branch. He jumped up. Ah. Grabbed the branch, and yanked himself up, sat on the branch. The boar's down there, waiting for him to come down again, very enthusiastically. And then suddenly he looks down, straight down, what does he see? Right below the branch, he jumped from an angle. Below him is a pit. A pit, and inside are all these squirming snakes, pythons and cobras and all kinds of beautiful snakes crawling around in the bottom of the pit, looking up at him. If he were to fall off the branch, he would be a nice object for their pleasure. Not very pleasant meditation. So he's stuck up there, and then he looks, and he hears this, actually hears this sound. What is that? He looks at the end of the tree, the end of the branch. There is one woodpecker. Busily, chipping into the tree, into the branch. Sooner or later, that branch is going to go. And there's probably a tiger there in the forest, too. I don't know if that was there, too. All around there is danger. What to do? What a horrible situation. This is hell. But then suddenly someone goes, pop, what's that? He looks up. Aha! There's a beehive! Ah, and then a few minutes later, another drop. Wow, that was delicious! Wow, how nice this is. When will that next drop come? When will it come? And he's looking at the beehive, waiting for that nectar. When will it come? Meanwhile, the woodpecker and the snakes and the hawk and the tiger all around. Just waiting for the guy to drop. And it's a matter of time, you know, when you drop, the dogs are waiting, licking their lips, the vultures are flying over, the ants are queuing up, and the germs are all getting excited. Sooner or later, it will be a feast for them. This is the material word, jivo, jivasya, jivanam. Yes, we all end up in the same boat in this world. This is the misery of this material world. Even if we've got city karma, even if we go to heaven, even if wherever we go, it's only a show. And sooner or later we'll fall down into this whatever it is, according to our karma. We have to give it up. This is the material world. It is a dangerous place. Very dangerous. But because of this illusion of Maya, she causes this, this is one of her potencies, to cover the living entity, to make us think we belong here. That you're the body. Nice body, look at it in the mirror. As Prahlad Nanda Maharaj always says, who is the most beautiful of them all? And we look in the mirror, and we think that I'm the most beautiful. Mirror, oh, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the most beautiful of them all? You are, as we look in the mirror. Yes, look at my beautiful hair. Oh, yes, how beautiful I am, how nice I am. This is Maya's illusion. And we become very, very attached to our body, to our mind, to what we think is right and wrong, to other people around us who give us sense gratification, and to those who don't, we hate them, and we'll try to kill them if we can. But in this way, we become completely absorbed in this material world, and if it gets too bad, we just drink some liquor, or stick some tea or coffee down the throat, or stick a cigarette in the mouth, or some intoxication of some sort, or we stick ourselves in front of a television and become completely brainwashed or whatever it is, by brain dirted by the television, or something like that. We do something to try to forget our worries in this world. But none of these things work. None of them, because we are still in the prison house. We are still in the prison house of this material world, and death is creeping up at any moment. Even if we can run away, we can go here and there. You cannot escape. When death comes, it comes. Poof. Time's up. It's all over, Mr. Joe. Mr. Patel, your time is up. Mr. Joe Patel. They call themselves Joe Patel in the West. Stephen Patel, David Patel, and so on. But you still have to go to hell, even if you're Mr. Patel. You have to fall in the well, unless you take shelter of Krishna. This is the nature of the material. Well, there's one story, famous story, you've probably heard it many times, but it's always relevant to hear and remind ourselves of, you cannot escape from the reality of this. Where one man, he was in what's that place where all the fighting's going on? In Iraq. What's it called? The capital of Iraq? Baghdad. Huh? Baghdad? Baghdad. They got some funny names. We won't get into that. But anyway, this man, rich man, he had a servant, and one day he sent the servant down to the market to do some shopping, down to get some sabjis and stuff. And he went down to the market, and the fellow, the shock of his life, someone tapped him on the shoulder. Hey! He looked round. Oi! Oh! He had this scared out of his wits. Right behind him was this terrifying person. He said, who are you? I'm death personified. The man was scared stiff. And he ran for his life. Ran back to his master. Help! I want to get out of here. I'm terrified. Send me somewhere else immediately. I can't stand it here. The temple presence is driving me crazy. Whatever it is. We're always trying to get out of where we are. You don't succeed. You can go to another temple if you want, but it's no better. Still have to suffer. We've got our baggage, which we have to let go of. So anyway, his master was thinking, is he crazy or what? Anyway, he was insisting, no, I've seen death personified. He's here. He's after me. Send me away somewhere else. Save me. All right. They didn't have aeroplanes in those days. So he got his fastest horse. They have very fast horses in those parts of the world, Arabia and those countries. He gave him his fastest horse and sent him off to another place, Samarkand, I think it was. He sent him off to another town somewhere. And the fellow was, oh, thank you so much. And so he got on the horse and, whoa, he was away. What a relief. I've escaped from danger. Whew. He got to Samarkand. In the meantime, the master went down to the market. He thought, I'm going to check this one out. Is death personified actually hanging out down at the market? So he went down to the market and he looked around. He couldn't see him anywhere. I don't see him anywhere. And all of a sudden, he looked in the corner of the market. And there he was, standing there, lurking. In the corner of the market. Death personified. Ooh, scary. Anyway, the boss, the master wasn't scared. He went up to him and said, excuse me. Yes? Can I ask you a question? What do you want to know? He said, this morning, when I sent my servant down to the market, why did you scare him in the way you did? Why did you do that? He said. Why? He said, because I was very surprised to see that he was in Baghdad. Why? He said, because I have an appointment with him this evening in Samarkand. Which is where the fellow had gone. You cannot escape. There's no way. There's only one way out. You can go to the heavenly planets if you want for a little while and then suffer terribly when you're thrown back down again. Or you can go to hell for a while and think, I'll never do what I did again, and come back to the earth and then do it all again. We don't learn very easily in this world. This is Maya. But by the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of the devotees of the Lord, even though we're addicted to material world, some, of course you're not, but people are in general, and they cannot immediately take easily to this Krishna consciousness. So the Lord has appeared in his most merciful form as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Srila Prabhupada. This is the real potency. People would often ask Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, have you got siddhis? Have you got mystic powers? What would Prabhupada say? Would he suddenly start flying in the air? Flapping his arms and flying in the air? If he did, the whole world would start worshipping him. Imagine if suddenly you started flying around like this. Maybe some people can do it, I don't know. But everyone would think you were quite extraordinary. You could easily convince people you were God, right? Or he's sort of walking on the water or something. I don't know if anyone can actually do these things. They say they can, but we don't see it very often. They have some of these people in India. They don't see them around much. They're hiding. Maybe they're very... They don't want to play this cheating game. The pure devotee may have those qualifications, those mystic powers. They're minimal. They're insignificant in comparison to the real mystic power, which is to get release from this material world. This is the real city. How to get freed from this, not how to float around in the material world. Birds can also fly, fishes can swim, not a big deal. Worms can enter into the ground, and you know, it's not a big deal to do that, you know, to be a worm in the human body or a bird in the human body. It's not a big deal. The real thing is to get out of it altogether. That's the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Prabhupada said, yes. What are your siddhis? What is your mystic power? This is the mystic power. Just see all these young men and women, how they are given up. How they have given up sense gratification, material sense gratification. This is the real city. It's not to be able to fly to another planet, but to get out of this material world for a permanent solution. Not to go up and down all the time like a yo-yo. This is not a big achievement. Children, they play with their yo-yos. They'll get out of the material world. And this is the special mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's made it so easy. That even though we may not have that punya, as we were discussing, I think, yesterday, we may not have that punya. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, this is trick. Prabhupada said, I've tricked you all. He's tricked us. In the beginning, it was really clearly a trick. You know, chant Hare Krishna, be high forever. That was one of the most famous methods in the early days. As the young people in the West in those days, they were all into getting high. Not in the sky exactly, maybe, but high in some kind of intoxicated way. So I think Hayagriva, one of the early devotees, he made this flyer chant Hare Krishna and be high forever. Don't have to come down. Go up and down in the material. No, stay up. So you may have the wrong impression what that means, but nonetheless, this is the trick. This is the real mystical trick of Krishna consciousness. Once you've taken that medicine, once you've taken that drop of Krishna consciousness, you're finished. It's all too late now, I'm sorry. You can go a little distance around, but you can't escape again. Your material life is finished. Even if you try to get away, Prabhupada one time said, wonder what he asked him a question. He said, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes devotees leave ISKCON. Prabhupada cut him off. He said, nobody leaves ISKCON. I will not let them leave. They may, like a dog on a leash, may go away and sniff the material world for a little while. But you can't get away. The leash is there. The lead is there. You can't get away. You're caught. This is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Anyone who hears the holy name, anyone who chants the holy name, who tastes Krishna Prasadam, who even, look, just imagine the Sankirtan party, the Harinam party, going down Fifth Avenue in New York, or Oxford Street in London. You know, I don't know what your equivalent is in Bombay. But these are streets. It's said that 1 million people a day go on Oxford Street. 1 million people a day shop on Oxford Street in London. I don't know what Fifth Avenue is like. But it's enormous. And when the Harinam party goes down that street, everybody sees the Harinam. That means that everyone's spiritual life, if not already, has begun. Everyone receives a jnata sukriti. This is the real sukriti, the real piety, is that unknowingly they have received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And their life in this material world is the beginning of the end. It is the beginning of the end. It may not be like on the spur of the moment, but it is the beginning of the end. They're going on, maybe take a little while, but their path back to God, it has begun. This is the mercy. 1 million people, or whatever it is, hundreds of thousands, see, and they whatever they think, they may think, those crazy Hare Krishnas are here again. What are they up to? I think they're intoxicated. They're mad. Or whatever they think. Or they cannot help but get it out of their mind. One devotee in England was studying at a university college in England. And it was funny how this came about. I mentioned yesterday I was born in Pig Hill. That was the name of the town I was born in. And this college was in Pig Hill. And this person, he wasn't a full-time devotee, he was just interested. He was studying in this college, in that town, some years later. And he was studying a course on advertising. Advertising. So one day the lecturer was giving a presentation on expert techniques of capturing people's attention through advertising. You know, they're always trying to do something to capture her attention. This is Maya. She's the expert advertiser. Creates everything as one big, like, magnetic attraction. So he was given this presentation, and then suddenly, it was visual, some kind of video thing. Suddenly, on the screen, who should come on the screen? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The devotees going down Oxford Street chanting Hare Krishna. And all the other people, the devotee didn't say anything. He was like, my God, what's going on here? He was amazed. He was a congregational devotee, but he knew this Harinam. And he thought, wow, what has this got to do with advertising? And then the man, the teacher or whatever, he was giving the talk. He said, now just watch. And then the camera started going on all the people in the street. Every single person on the street was looking like this. Some of them going, some of them were smiling. But everyone was noticing it. Every single person was noticing it. And then he said, this is an example of expert advertising. We may not follow up on our advert very well, but we capture everyone. That will take time. But we capture everyone's attention when you go on the street dancing. You capture everyone's attention. There's no doubt about it. Everywhere in the world, even the police, you capture their attention. Very much so sometimes. So much so they take you inside their house. They say, come home. I want you to come to my home. Come with me. They take you home. They used to do that to us in London. They used to arrest this one police sergeant. He said, okay, boys, come on. He used to tell his officers, whenever you see them, arrest them, okay? And as soon as we get to the prison, he said, oh, come on, now come on, start chanting. Chant. Come on, sing, sing. We'd be in the prison singing away. He wouldn't let us stop, you know. This is a funny world. But anyway, this people don't know it. They think it's just another activity and we're just another bunch of people getting in the way or whatever it is. Can't be bothered singing for our bread and butter. Even in Navadvip, they used to think like that about the devotees. But the fact of the matter is that this is actually the greatest mercy. This is the real mystic power. This is the real city that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us, this wonderful opportunity to both ourselves to absorb in Krishna consciousness, change our own hearts, and by giving Krishna consciousness to others without their knowledge. In the beautiful pastime of when Shivananda Sain was traveling from Navadvip to Puri, and the dog, you all know the story, of course, of that fortunate dog who took shelter of Shivananda Sain. Srila Prabhupada describes that anyone who's fortunate enough to become the dog of a pure devotee is guaranteed to go back to Godhead. So that dog went back to Godhead, as we all know. But one of the purports there, Srila Prabhupada explains that by the good wishes of a devotee, that everybody in this world can go back to Godhead just by their good wishes alone. And he said, therefore, I hope that all of the devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement become sincere and pure in their Krishna consciousness, so that just by their wishes alone, by their desire alone, all the living entities in the world, maybe I said the universe, I can't remember, but all the living entities will go back to Godhead even without their knowledge. This is the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. This is the real mystic power. This is the, because Krishna is obligated to fulfill the desire of his dear devotee. Srila Prabhupada, his desires to see, Lord Chaitanya's desires to see, Priti Viti Achiyati Nagaradi Gram, Sarvatra Prachura Hoibi Moranam, to see that the holy name should be heard and chanted in every town and every village of the world. This is the how we become free from serving time, how we become free from this attraction to the sense objects, by absorbing ourselves in Nam Sankirtan, in chanting and hearing about Krishna, chanting and dancing in the kirtan. If we want to get out of this bodily concept of life, we have to use this body in the service of Krishna. And thus the concept will be changed from Maya to Krishna. Krishnized, Prabhupada would say. Everything will be Krishnized. The whole world will then be seen in relation with Krishna. This is the mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to utilize everything. Charity begins at home. Utilize our body, our mind, our words in the service of Krishna. And then we will see how to utilize everything. Krishna will give us everything around us to utilize in his service. When we fully engage what we've been given directly at our disposal, our mind, our body, words, intellect, and so on, in the service of Guru and Gauranga, then everything else will come. And this intelligence, this, let's say, determination even, this faith, will come as we absorb ourselves in the association of devotees, dancing and chanting. This is the essence of our movement. Lord Chaitanya's movement was dancing, chanting, and fasting. Feasting. Not fasting. Feasting. We may also fast on Ekadashi. On Ekadashi, we have an Ekadashi feast. It used to be the biggest feast of the month on Ekadashi, when I joined anyway. We used to look forward to Ekadashi. You have to do what is favorable for your advancement. But this is Lord Chaitanya's main mission. Dance and chant. What a simple process. What is the difficulty? Is it nice? Are we dancing because we're miserable? Are we chanting so we can get something to eat at breakfast? Or do we get a good wage packet? Do you get paid for it? They pay you a good wage here? You pay a good salary? How much do the devotees get paid for dancing and chanting? Pardon? Pure, you get paid with pure love of Krishna. What is that? What can I buy with pure love of Krishna? This is ultimately, yes, Krishna Prem. This is Krishna Pumata Mahan. This is the result. Goloka Premadana, Harinama Sankirtana. This Harinama is descended from Golok. It's Prem, Goloka Premadana. It's come mercifully into this world. And Krishna has appeared, giving himself. This is Krishna. If we could understand that Krishna is here, wouldn't we dance and chant and sing? Wouldn't we be happy? It's like in the material world. Even the material world, people start dancing and chanting when they see the objects of their adoration before them. I don't know who in India is the most adored person. Probably the captain of the Indian cricket team, I imagine. Isn't it? I don't know. But whoever it is, if you suddenly saw them, you'd be so happy. Autograph, photograph, touch them, say something, pat me on the head. Oh, how fortunate I am. You're jumping up and down in the air in ecstasy. Oh, glorious to them, oh, glorious to them. That's madness. But this is because of the nature of the living entity. To glorify others, to worship others, to want to be with a great person. This is natural, but we're just doing it wrongly. Glorifying dogs as gods. This is the madness. But if we could realize Krishna's here, how happy we would be. And he is here. So this is, he's appeared in a way that automatically, spontaneously, that we start to dance and chant. Even ordinary persons in the association of devotees, we're all ordinary, but persons who are not even contacting Krishna, we go in Sankirtan summers. Now today we're going on Jagannath Rath Yatra. Even drunkards. So many times around the world, drunkards come up to the party. The Sankirtan party, they're completely drunk. And they come right in the middle of it. And they go off. But they got some mercy, you know. I don't know what the hell's going on, but their path back to God, it has begun. Don't doubt it. They offered us some beer. That's happened to us many a time. They throw their beer at us. But that's an offering. They got nothing else to offer. See it as nothing else. Good fortune for them. Don't get angry or puffed up. This way, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya is engaging everyone in Krishna's service, some or another. All right, we'll finish there. Are there any questions or call? The point of that was that no matter if we have these cities and we go to the heavens or we go to the hells or we have all these abilities given to us by Krishna, we get attached to them. We have to remain in the prison house of the material world. We have to utilize these if we have any. Everything we have is a city of a sort. So if we utilize that in the service of Krishna, we get released. Nibandha Krishna Sambandha, Yukta Varagam. Utilize everything in Krishna's service and get released from this prison house of the material world. And we can, the real mystic powers, the pure devotee, he gives this method or this link, this means by which we can get out of the prison permanently, simply engaging us. Engaging our cities in the service of the Supreme Yogesh, the Supreme Master of all mystics. Okay, we're finished there. Any comments or questions?
I mean, Britishers are basically known to be gentlemen. They pride themselves to be gentlemen. How come gentlemen?
Gentlemen?
Gentlemen. They know that.
Nobody is?
No, Britishers.
Britishers.
Yeah,
they say are that Britishers are gentlemen?
Yeah, they call themselves, they pride themselves, no, in being gentlemen. How do they behave like that, you know, when they go on Harinam? Why do they act in such a way? I mean, just basically they call themselves, you know, gentlemen. And
Britisher gentlemen, yeah, very gentle. The British Empire. We call it the British Vampire. I was discussing that the other day with, I don't know how it came out. I just said, you mean the British Vampire? Oh, it just came out of the mouth like that, you know. Here's the British Vampire. Wolves in sheep's clothing, they call it. A wolf in sheep's clothing. They dress up nice with their bow tie and their. No, who is a gentleman? British, American, even Indian now. A gentleman is not somebody who is makes his own standards, what is right and wrong, and what is polite, and so on and so forth. It's not really a gentleman. Gentleman is one who behaves in such a way as not to cause any distress to another. So somebody who is behaving in a way as to cause a distress or engaging another in a way which will cause them suffering is not a gentleman at all. People may call him a gentleman. Now, in any case, in Kali Yuga, a gentleman, how is a gentleman, how is, according to 12th Canto Bhagavatam, a gentleman is analyzed as somebody who's got money, as somebody who is handsome, somebody who is famous, somebody who has a lot of women, and so on. This is a gentleman. What kind of gentleman is that? It's not a gentleman. I wouldn't describe the British as gentlemen. They've coined this term, a gentleman. But as soon as you interfere with their sense gratification, Mr. Hitler interfered with their sense gratification, the British didn't like it. They wanted to blow the whole lot up. They didn't like it at all. A gentleman is a little different. A gentleman is one who is actually a devotee of Krishna. But others, no one else is really a gentleman. This is just a relative terminology according to the mode of nature which one is in. But the British are not really gentlemen. Now, why they behave the way they are? Because they're just, because everyone in this material world is frustrated. They're frustrated. This type of an illusory idea of what a gentleman is will not satisfy the self. This idea, even they become so-called, you know what, amongst the so-called gentlemen, there is a higher incident of crime than there is according amongst the so-called poverty class. There is more crime amongst the so-called gentlemen per head, intoxication, crime, illicit sex, than there is amongst the so-called poverty class. This is because they are frustrated with this false identity of being a gentleman. This is a false identity which would not satisfy the self, and maybe because they have the means to, frustrated they are, and they have the means to try to find other ways of satisfying their frustration. So many of them, one time I was on Sangatan in London, I had an interesting experience. I was distributing books late night on in Piccadilly Circus, and this one, we call them tramps. You know what a tramp is? They call them a bum. Call them bums in America, don't you? England, we call them tramp. I don't know what you call them here. They're like, you know, there's a lot of them. They just hang around. They just sleep on the road. This happens in London. There's so many of them hanging on the road. They have nothing. They don't bathe. They have no job. They just wear the same clothes their whole life. They drink wine or whatever liquor they can guzzle. And they're just like animals practically. They just hang around. Call them tramps. They just move around, sleep on the bench here and there in the stations. And anyway, I met one of these guys. He came up to me and he said, he spoke very eloquently. He said, "What have you got?" And I said, "This is the Bhagavad Gita." And he said, "Bhagavad Gita? Can I have a look?" And I showed him the Bhagavad Gita. He said, "I know this book." And I said, "How do you know this book?" He said, "When I was young, I was a nuclear physicist." Going back a few years, he was a nuclear physicist just after the Second World War, he said. "I was a nuclear physicist." I said, "What happened?" He said, "I got so fed up with life. I got sick of it. The whole thing made me feel so sick. I didn't know what to do. I just gave up." And he said, "How do you know the Bhagavad Gita?" He said, "My teacher studied it." I said, "Who is your teacher?" "Oppenheimer." It's a true story. He said, "Oppenheimer was my teacher." And he regularly quoted from Bhagavad Gita. He said he studied Sanskrit for 12 years. Oppenheimer, who discovered the atomic bomb, was his teacher. This is the result of material life. So-called nuclear physicist. Got sick of it. You cannot get any pleasure. Even in England, a famous pop group, Diksha Kurunakul will know them very well, the Rolling Stones. You've heard of them? They're still around. Have you heard of the Rolling Stones? The Rolling, now they're just bags of bones and they're still rolling. The Rolling Bones. And they were always stoned. You don't know that term. You know. But their favorite song, the most popular song, what was that? "I can't get no satisfaction." They would sing on the stage going mad. And the whole audience, 50, 200, 300,000 people screaming at the top of their voice, "I can't get no satisfaction." Now these people, these Rolling Stones, we're paying £20, what is that in rupees, thousands of rupees, to go and sing, hear them sing and tell us they can't get no satisfaction. And we've just spent 20 quid. How are we going to get any satisfaction? They're getting all the money and still they can't get satisfaction. This is Maya. This is the illusion. They're screaming. And we're worshipping them and we still don't realize what they're telling us. Maya, somehow a Christian works through these people. But we don't listen. We think this is very nice. Yes, keep beating me on the head. Very nice. Keep kicking me. This is the ass-like mentality. People are like asses. You dress an ass with a suit and tie? So what? still an ass. I saw an amazing sign one time. We got caught in a traffic jam. And this only happens once in a decade in New Zealand. It's such a quiet place. But anyway, this day there was a traffic jam. And there was a bus in front of us, a double-decker bus. There's only about six of them in the whole country. And there was this double-decker bus. You know, double-decker bus? And on the back was a big sign. A big sign. And the sign was very interesting. It was nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. It was just some, I don't know who it was, some New Age group, I think. I don't know who they were, but some interesting group must have put this sign up. And the sign said, you know, have you heard of the rat race? The rat race. Have you heard of the rat race? The rat race. What is the rat race? The rat race. Yeah, Bombay is a typical example of the rat race. Everyone is trying to get on and compete with each other and go up the corporate ladder. Also the corporal, we're going down the corporal ladder, up the corporate ladder. So everyone wants, it's called the rat race. For some reason, the rats are always racing and not really getting anywhere. But anyway, it's called the rat race. So it said, even if you win the rat race, you are still a rat. Even if you do get to the top, you're still really a nobody. You've got a label. It doesn't mean anything. There's no question. You know, you may call yourself this or call it, but it's only for a few moments. You cannot stay there. This is the nature of the material world. So the British Empire, British vampire comes and goes. They suck the world. And then they have to pay the price. Now they're being sucked by everybody else. Miserable place. I hope you haven't come to England yet. I'm sure it's down at the bottom of below the subterranean heavenly planet somewhere. One time when Prabhupada was in London, one devotee, she asked Srila Prabhupada in the class, she said, Srila Prabhupada, is the Bhagavad Gita spoken in the hellish planets? Prabhupada looked at her and he said, yes. We are preaching Bhagavad Gita in London. It's hell. It is hell. You can be a so-called gentleman in hell if you want. A master in hell rather than a servant in heaven. Okay, we'll finish there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gopremanandi.